Hello there, and thank you for tuning in to our podcast, Paying It Forward with Mentoring or MOCA, brought to you today by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. My name is Carrie Robidoux, and I'm an Extension Educator in Youth Development with a focus on distance learning technology. Joining me today is my colleague, Josh Kukowski, who is also an Extension Educator. Hello, Josh.
Well, hello, everybody. And I want to say I do have some coffee in my hand, so thank you, Carrie.
That's right. I brought some mocha in the spirit of the title of the presentation here today. Josh, thank you. And again, thank you so much for joining us on this conversation on mentoring. Let's start with you telling a little bit about you and specifically why you're interested in mentoring and your basic experience in this topic. Mm-hmm.
I came from, I was a teacher for 10 years, and I taught 7 years high school in Baltimore, Maryland, and I taught 3 years overseas in Colombia, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And, you know, one of the things that I took away from my very variety of teaching experiences is that aside from the content, aside from the structures, aside from, in some cases, missteps by, administration or colleagues. Mm-hmm. The most important thing in a child's success has always been a positive relationship between an adult and a youth. So in the midst of a toughest circumstance, you can still find those positive relationships. And in the midst of the most successful schools, things can fall short. And so, but the key learning that's always been the piece about that has been positive relationships between adults and youth. And what brought me in the extension world to mentoring really was a couple years ago, I stumbled across a quote, and I'm just going to read it to you, and it kind of hopefully will capture some of the things we'll talk about today. Renee Spencer, Antoinette Basualdo, and DeMonaco wrote this. Mentoring programs tend to serve vulnerable youth. Their vulnerabilities can be both more challenging to form more meaningful. Mentor vulnerabilities can make it both more challenging to form a more meaningful relationship and heighten the potential for success.
Mm. Perfect.
So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about why I'm interested in extension and how we can help out with mentoring here.
Yeah, thank you. And I do appreciate you bringing not only your interest, but your experience and hands-on with young people that you've worked with. So let's start with this. I read a blog of yours from the Youth Development Insight blog, where you told a story of how you had your first pay it forward experience at a coffee shop. And as you mentioned earlier, I brought coffee for us today in the spirit of mentoring or MOCA. Tell us, tell the listeners about that experience and why it reminded you of mentoring.
Well, I was in the drive-thru at Starbucks, and no one expects to get that, the person in front of you bought your coffee. Would you like to continue the chain? Okay, because you've got the mindset that you're going in there just for you to get whatever coffee or whatever, you're planning on getting. You don't have the expectation that someone in front of you bought whatever you wanted. It's a moment that just throws you off. And so it causes you to reflect about, for me, it caused me to reflect about how someone, in my life, in multiple people in my life, not just one person, multiple people in my life, really influenced me and helped me steer me on the right path. And so, and symbolically, then I did purchase the coffee to the person behind me as well. Apparently, the chain actually made the news that day. I think it was like 10 or 15 cars long. I think Starbucks nice. Let them know that. But until there was one free rider at the end. But but I think it just kind of threw me off to think about, how the people in front of me in my life really made things happen for that. And then I guess in my point in my career and my life, how I can kind of just pass that on. And mentoring is a perfect opportunity for that. It really is, as simple as I said at the beginning, adults caring about young kids, adults having a passion for young people, and kids also finding the right adults. And we'll talk a little bit about how some of those things can happen successfully here in a few moments here. But that's kind of where it came about, the idea.
And that metaphor is just perfect, I think, for this topic. And leads me to a quote of yours that I wanted to mention. You said, "Mentoring is more than a trendy program that can be seen as a quick way to increase enrollment, get funding, or show value in your program. Why? Tell us more about why it's more than that. You know, anybody listening out there who has a mentoring program, why is it more than those are perhaps the things we think of first?
Right. And I think when you say trendy program, and I think there's, because they're starting to get substance behind it. I did mention right now that we are starting to get on, you know, on closer to 15 to 20 years of research that shows that mentoring makes a difference. We're also having a national conversation, whether we want to or not. It's happening right now where instead of focusing on, you know, our most troubled youth, as I talked about at the beginning, going into incarceration or going into other systems, we're trying to get on the preventative side of that. And so mentoring really is in some cases a preventative program. It's also good for everybody, but it's also a preventative program. And when you talk about a trendy program, the federal government in particular and state governments are following the lead, in some cases leading, they're throwing substantial resources behind mentoring. And they're seeing that the research has paid off, that matching positive adults with kids can tilt the kids in the right direction, can tilt our most vulnerable youth in the right direction, essentially keep them out of the system. And, you know, essentially, you know, we're in a, you know, the term incarceration nation. We don't want to, you know, we're shifting hopefully away from that. And mentoring is one tool in the toolkit that we can do that. So billions of dollars are being sent towards mentoring in direct ways and indirect ways. And but now the research is starting to show that there is true value in that. It's not just a trendy program. Mentoring is going to be here, and it's going to be here to stay from here on forward.
Yeah, I like that in that positive youth development approach. Mentoring is a very important tool in that toolkit. You mentioned the United States and that mentoring is emerging, continues to emerge as a very important aspect of our work with youth. You also have family in Colombia, and you have lived in Colombia for a time. I was wondering if you would share with us some of your experiences there that you had specifically with mentoring and your thoughts on cross-cultural mentoring topics.
I did mention I had a couple of distinct experiences in Colombia. As I remember, one thing as a teacher that I, in the formal school, I taught at a high school there, is they didn't use my last name is Kakowski. They didn't use Mr. K or Mr. Kakowski or Sir. They called me by my first name, and that was something that you know, threw me off guard. I'm much like that, you know, getting a coffee. Like, I mean, these kids were always calling me by my first name, and I was so used to being called in a formal title. And Guru to embrace that as a way of the informality of that, of how that positive youth development can take place, or how not positive, but how that those relationships can take place. You know, I don't have to address you by some far off title, you know, but I address you by your first name, and I address the kids by that same way. So it was already a bridge right there. So in that sense, some countries that have that informal thing promotes positive relationships. I worked with a couple foundations that mentored both young adults, and then I also mentored young kids. And some of the takeaways that I found were that there isn't much different here than there. You know, finding things. You know, the things that kids cared about there and the things that kids care about here are very similar. Guys still care about girls. Girls still chase boys. Those kinds of things. Everyone wants to, you know, to go have fun and relax and have a good time. Everyone wants the best things for their kids, and all the kids have ambitions that are much bigger than they're so wonderful there too. So it's not those kinds of things transcend the cultures and cross the boundaries and cross the continents and the languages too. A takeaway, and we'll talk more about this too, is that finding the right adult with the kid was a big thing here. And so we stumbled a few times in some of the programs by, you know, kind of forcing matches with kids. And we did some sort of informal mentoring and both formal mentoring there where, you know, I was assigned to this group of kids or some kids were assigned to me. It didn't always work out. So, and we'll talk more about some of those takeaways here in a minute with a recipe for success. But in Colombia, it's the same kinds of things. It's matching the right adult to the right kid or group of kids for that.
Yeah, and we often talk about in our positive youth development approach, and I'll bring up again Gisela Kanapka's basic youth needs from the 1970s and how those have transcended over time. It sounds like in your experiences, those basic youth yep. needs also transcend right, over the right. cultures.
It's not as foreign as people sometimes think we were, you know, we were in. And some of the places we were in were some very impoverished neighborhoods in Bogota and in Medellin, the two biggest cities there. They have a terrible reputation if you just kind of, you know, but the thing is that the kids were the kids and the same across the board. So we even mentored kids inside a prison. And so, weren't in the prison. We mentored kids of incarcerated parents. And so those kids are, you know, extremely vulnerable to the system. They see things that a lot of times they shouldn't see, you know, at that age, you know, and those kinds of things. And we found ways to mentor and match those kids and have some success and hopefully tilt them in the right direction for that, so that their circumstances were temporary as opposed to, you know, I've been pegged as a kid of an incarcerated parent, therefore I'm going to be an incarcerated parent too. So
you mentioned the recipe for success, and you've given some thought about that, of what you would include in that recipe for a successful mentoring program. Share with us a few of those ingredients to that recipe.
Well, you're right. One of the things is, as much as it's good-hearted adults and you know, matched up with the kids here, and we'll talk about that matching process here in a moment, there is some research that shows that you should be somewhat familiar with, and I'm not going to go through all the substantial research because there's very different types and dosages here. But one of the pieces that's important, and I alluded to this a couple times, is an appropriate match. You want to find, and it needs to happen as natural as one can happen. You want to find matches that are based on a lot of times mutual interests. Just because he's available and she's available doesn't mean that's a good match. It's actually the worst type of match. You want to find, finding a way of capturing what kids are passionate about and then coupling that with what adults, which skills that are similar to that part of it. You want to make the discussions happen as informal as possible. You don't want to, the more formal mentoring looks, you know, like where you almost like, it's almost like a clinical psychologist, you know, or, you know, where you're on a couch or something like that. You want to have these mentoring things surrounded around projects, surrounded around activities, surrounded around play. One of the blogs I wrote about was where just mentoring took place, where people just went to a park. And there was very few things that were talked about other than just interacting around, playing, whether it be soccer or playing ultimate frisbee or whether that be, just even walking around a park. So a lot of times you want to make it happen as natural. The more you force things, the less likely they are to happen. So when you do have a moment of, you know, when a kid really needs to talk, it's not as awkward, or vice versa, for that part of it here. So making sure you're having a match is appropriate too. Mm-hmm. We can mentor more than one kid, and group mentoring works very well. One of the things that tends to work best is that it shows that you don't want to have more than four in a mentoring group. That's not a steadfast number, but that tends to be a number. It becomes actually pretty burdensome for the mentor to mentor multiple kids here. And then sometimes having four kids sometimes changes the dynamic of the discussion. They may just talk about they may not get to the heart of the intention of the program, or their interest may change throughout the year as they grow part of it. So trying to keep that, that number as close to 1-to-1 as possible, but, knowing that 4-to-1 as well. In addition, peer mentoring is, with kids that are 3 years or older than the younger, than the kids, we don't want to have, generally speaking, the same age mentors. They have similar experiences. Try to have a 2-to-3-year age gap between that is something else to think about when you're doing with peer mentoring, which has a last piece here. Another thing here is ongoing training. If you are a coordinator of mentors or mentor activities, checking in with your mentors. What do they need? How are they doing? Are there any topic conversations coming across? So you're coordinating the activities that are happening, making sure that you're not abandoning the mentors. In addition, that also provides kind of a safety net and a security pieces to the kids, is that you're constantly knowing what's going on here. So if the kid takes a couple steps back, you can certainly address that with the mentor and find ways of doing that. And additionally, if one of the most damaging things actually in mentoring, and this is something that I want to be very clear about, is if the expectation that this mentor will be with this kid for 6 to 12 or a longer period of time, and that relationship fractures, let's say the adult moves away or just chooses not to be a part of the program, that actually can have, you know, potentially devastating consequences on a kid. If I mentioned earlier, our vulnerable kids are more susceptible to trauma. The last thing we want to do is introduce more trauma. And so there's been some case studies that have shown that fracturing relationships early, terminating relationships early for actually could cause more harm than good. So yeah, those are a couple of things that I would think about to consider.
Yeah, thank you. You've shared a lot of your experiences and your thinking based on your experiences and research that you have read. Can you tell us a little bit more about key research or researchers you would recommend for anyone out there who wants to learn more, who wants to know what are some key things I can read, look into, to know more about this topic?
Yes, absolutely. There's a couple things. If you're a mentor looking for some toolkits, you know, a toolkit that's, you know, that is very comprehensive, but also there is, even within this, and I'll share the website in a moment here, there, it's a very comprehensive toolkit, but there's also kind of executive summaries or just like the nuggets that you need to do that. Mentor.org. Just Google it, mentor.org, and you'll be get you that. These guys are gals as well. They are probably they're nationally recognized. I would say internationally recognized for their work on what mentoring can do. They have, it's really kind of a clearinghouse for a lot of the research. It's readable. It's accessible. It's clear. It's what I use when I oftentimes need a training topic. I use them first. In addition, if you want something a little bit more institutional, if you're looking for that, it's called the Handbook of Youth Mentoring, and it's edited by David Du Bois and Michael Karcher. These two guys have put a substantial amount of work into this. They also include case studies which would cover the wide variety of mentoring activities that take place, even talking about e-mentoring, even talking about large group mentoring, peer mentoring. They talk about the whole, you know, from front to back, all levels of mentoring. And the last person I'd recommend, two more things, is a guy named Jerry Shirk, a former Cleveland Brown. He's pretty much an expert on group mentoring. So if you're working in smaller groups, you know, anywhere from hopefully 0 to 4, or 1 to 4, not 0 to 4. That's just talking to yourself if it's 0. He's a good research, and you can his articles are readily available as well. And then on your own level, you should have a knowledge of the community too. And so your own research is important. So you don't want to just kind of implement a program that's been working somewhere else into a community that may not fit. You kind of need to have a handle on what's going on in the community. Oftentimes, there is mentoring activities going on. How can you maybe add to it, or how can you join with it, or how can you, or if not, then how can you begin? So those are some things I'd recommend, and hopefully point you in the right direction.
Well, great. Those are a great handful of resources that I appreciate you sharing with us today, as well as your insights on mentoring. You can find us on www.extension.umn.edu/youth for more information on mentoring, as well as other research, training, and events, both online and in person. And make sure you also check out information about our Minnesota 4-H program. Keep the conversation going by checking out our Youth Development Insight blog that you can also find on that website. That's going to wrap up our podcast for today. Again, my name is Carrie Rabideau. Thank you for joining me, Josh Dukowski.
Absolutely happy to be here.
And we are from the University of Minnesota Center for Youth Development. I hope that you'll tune in again. Thank you.
Thank you.